federal assistance to handle a
flood of illegal
immigrants. Congressman Henry Cuellar says the focus should be on his border district.
What they're seeing in New York and Washington, D.C. is really a drop in the bucket of the numbers of people that we've been seeing for years after years after years.
The Texas Democrat says some of the federal cash that's coming to border states could be siphoned away to help other cities. There is no geographical limitation on the funding. That's something he opposes, though. A crowd continues to gather outside Dodger Stadium, where a makeshift memorial is growing in honor of legendary play-by-play announcer Vin Scully.
It's the end of an era, and there's nobody like him. Well, thank you, Vin.
When I was young, I used to hear him all the time on the radio. I used to keep score with him calling the games, so it's pretty special to come out here with my daughter and celebrate his life.
Scully passed away yesterday at the age of 94. He was a broadcaster for nearly 70 years, joining the Dodgers broadcast team in the 1950s and retiring in 2016. Tonight, the Dodgers play the Giants in San Francisco, where a moment of silence will be observed for Scully. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
In the wee hours of the night, when everyone else is fast asleep, you're the one on third shift, burning the midnight oil. When a part fails and everything comes to a grinding halt, regardless of what the clock on the wall says, you leap into action. Granger is with you and all the ones who get it done. With 24/7 customer support by phone or click to chat. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. We'll see mostly cloudy skies for most of the morning, gradually clearing by this afternoon to sunny skies. High temperatures around 75, 76 degrees. We'll also have a little bit of wind out of the south to southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, clouds with a slight chance of rain showers actually moving in off the coast. Low temperatures down to about 60. For Thursday, clouds and light rain making way to partly sunny skies by Thursday afternoon. High temperatures around 69, 70. Mostly clear skies for Thursday night. Lows back down to about 55. For Friday and running up into the weekend, more sunshine expected. High temperatures back on the ups. High temperatures around 75 for Friday and making way to the low 80s by Sunday.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obear, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelts and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome back to Transformation Change Radio with my delightful dear friend and co-host, Dr. Becky Martinez. I'm Dr. Kathy Obear. We're excited you joined us. Today, we're going to mix it up just a little bit because we've been looking at issues of class and classism with guests for, what, 6 or 7 months now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what we decided kind of this halfway point through the year is to take a pause and talk about, for folks that have been listening, what could you do for workshops and trainings if you feel ready or you want to start doing things in your organization. And then towards the end, we may personally share what we've learned and impact from actually being with each other and guests in these first 3 months. So Becky, so excited to have this time with you.
Yeah, it's been awesome to have guests, and it'll be good for, I think, me and for us to talk through some of the pieces that have struck us, or like, huh, what would sessions look like? What does integrating work around social class identity, class and classism, like, look and feel like, and some of the maybe more pragmatic ways to have it happen in our organizations and in our families and in our everyday lives. So it's not just at the workspace area, because for me, and as I think about identities often, you know, they are in every aspect of where we navigate the world. And for me, classism is always such a huge piece. Class and classism is such always a huge piece that I'm often thinking and feeling. So
I love that. And so as we talk about activities or reflections that people can do, you can do it individually. And as you said, you could be somewhere outside of an environment and just say, huh, and then ask a question that we're offering today. So take good notes, everybody, and also you can re-listen to it. But particularly if you're inside organizations, I'll bet you'll get lots of ideas for strategies. And so the first thing that came to me as I was thinking about this conversation, Becky, is leaders may not be willing to do this work, invest. It could be internal people do it, but that's still time and resources and time away from other tasks. So what are some reasons that leaders and employees really need to, you know, the leadership case? Why is it critical to look at class and classism, class identity inside organizations?
The first part for me is that there's a sense of belonging, that people feel valued, heard, and respected in the lens of class, and knowing that most organizations are hierarchical. There is a difference in pay. There is a difference in packages. There's a difference in retirement and responsibilities. And so even taking all of those considerations or variables into like play of reality, how do we still have spaces how does an organization still feel and the people in those organizations feel like they're a part of and that they belong and that they're heard and that their stories are valued and that they're just not there for a job or production, which is so counter to how we work in the world, at least in the U.S. context, because it's about production and output. And how do we as organizations have it be more about people than just here's the task or here's what you have to do. It is here's the job responsibilities and what you have to do. And we value who you are for feedback. We value who you are from your story. We value who you are and how, what your treatment is, what the language is that we use, that we don't, create a imbalance or a difference because you may not have a degree or you may be doing this particular type of job. Like, how do we have those people matter in our organizations?
So I hear you. I just read some study last week about why people are leaving, what they want in organizations. And it's so much of what you said, having meaningful work, making a difference, getting a chance to move up. And so particularly with the traditional hierarchical, I think one reason is to find internal folk who already know the culture, the climate, are committed to your organization, and when you're hiring and promoting, really see them as valuable assets, not just, oh, they're administrative assistants, oh, they're a team leader, but they're not going to move much farther. So how to really see true value and assets in your organization. The other thought that came as you were talking was to have people look at their strategic plan and then line everything up with that, but particularly retention and motivation and serving others, which are so key, that if folks don't feel like, as you said, they belong, they matter, their voice is included in decision-making, then those real business outcomes, which leaders measure, you won't meet them. And so
right.
I know you and I are passionate because that's just a social justice thing to do, but most people listening have leaders that they have to find literally the business case why to invest in this sort of additional type of training that they may never considered before.
Yeah. So a couple of things that struck me is even the concept of moving up. Right. And so how do we like reframe what that looks like for folks? Because some people, that may not be anything that they are wanting or needing, but we have this philosophy or ethos that's the expectation for folks. And that could very well be what folks want to do. And how do we still value those frontline jobs and workers and responsibilities as a valuable part of our organization? And we can coach and we can mentor and we could provide opportunities. And if they don't want that, Like, if they're like, I'm cool where I'm at because it is the place where I need to be, how do we not shame them or devalue them that they're not going up in the organization? So even in this class space, like paying attention to our language of what is valued and who is valued, and does up mean more value? Oftentimes it does. And so how are we finding value, professional development, you know, opportunities to have access and input in meetings. And they may not want the title to lead it, but they want to be able to provide, to have space to be able to have their voice heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that as often doesn't happen in lower. And so how do we create voice and access to the lower if we're using that language? But that's one of the things, like, huh, up low, like, let's throw that on its head for a little bit.
I know. And so as we're trying to get leaders to think why this is important, if they look at their data, why people are leaving, why they're staying, how they feel motivated to stay would get to a lot of what you're talking about. And in this context of 2.5 years of pandemic, I think many people are motivated to earn more money, whether that's a different job in the organization or we look to share resources differently in organizations. So once leaders agree, whether they're HR, whether they're management, that this work is needed, what could be some outcomes that could be reasonable? Because, you know, inside and outside organizations, they do need, when they're doing, okay, we're going to do this workshop, so what's it going to be, title, description? So what could be some ways for people to think about presenting this in a way that leaders, HR, will buy, knowing that it's so critical and needed?
Many times, it's understanding concepts. So being able to, so when I do this in academia, outcomes are related to a semester of classes. And so so I have shifted to the session. And almost everyone, like two of the ones that I always put is to learn concepts around related to capital for language purposes. Like, okay, so yes, class is about money and class is so much more than about money. So how do we talk about the various forms of capital and present those in ways that folks can hear them and understand them? And so relating the, okay, so here's like the conceptual framework of social class identity. So, and that broadens it, because oftentimes when we say class, many people go to SES, so income, and for our work on this show and my work in the world, it's so much more than just money. And money is important. Retirement packages are important. Like, I got to pay my bills. I want a savings. I want health insurance. And so, like, those should be baseline. And then how are these other forms of capital part of the organizational culture, or how do these other forms of capital show up in, you know, in indirect ways? And so just from a concept lens, here's language. Here are these different concepts. Here's how they play out in everyday lives and everyday cultural lives. And so then being able to give some story behind those forms of capital, because so many people get to these sessions and they just think money, and then even explaining what that money looks like, right? And so if they're just like focusing on the financial or economic capital pieces of it, let's talk about it from a systems perspective around power, privilege, oppression, and then class becomes a little bit confusing because whose definition are we using? So as an organization, really becoming clear on, so what are your definitions of class or social class identity, or what is your framework to talk about it? And as consultants or trainers, we may need to help them figure that out, because they're like, I don't know, we just need to do work on it. But like, let's help them become more clear on like the what, the why, the how, and have it be more than just like a one-time drop in 2-3 one-day session. Like, how are we continuing to have a lens, not even a critical lens, but a lens around how class exists in the organization?
I'd be really excited if an organization is ready for that sort of, this is what we need to do. Places that I end up doing consulting with may not yet be ready. So as you're talking, I'm like, so what would get their attention? So I wonder about intentions like, how inclusive is your organization related to less apparent dynamics like class and classism? And are there some ways that actually we're not as inclusive? There's not a sense of belonging for the employees and even in our services. And so those kind of questions, some people listening might, those might be umbrella questions. And then how do we get there? Well, we first have to understand some of these basic concepts. The other thing came up as you were talking as an outcome is increase the capacity to have authentic, engaged discussions about dynamics of class, classism, class dynamics, and an outcome maybe, and to be able to recognize these unproductive ways that class plays out and interrupt them in the moment, and even be proactive when you're making decisions. So those are the kind of outcomes that come to me as I was listening to you.
And maybe even the step before that, just as I think about doing like race and anti-racism work, sometimes it's like, how do you engage in conversations around race? How do you engage in conversations around anti-racism? And as we know, right, some campuses will be like, well, we read this book, we've had a book club, or we've brought in this speaker, or like, you know, like we're really focused on developing anti-racism lens, and these are the steps that we've done. But I think that that's the question for organizations in the beginning is, like, how does our organization, how does class exist in our organization? How do we engage it? What have we, like, do we talk about it? What are the ways in, and then you can look at the structure, like, what is the structure, right, or the policies or the practices around even talking about class, which we know from our own experience as well as people who have been on the show, like, we don't talk about pay. We don't, like, we're not, organizations aren't transparent or as transparent as they could be about some of the processes or some of the behind the curtains concepts around class. You know, do organizations offer when you meet with HR around a retirement plan, like, do you even understand this without a shaming way? Because the expectation is when we have that conversation with HR to talk about Dean, that people understand some of that. So how are we giving some pre-information even before that meeting to be like, okay, so you may be new to this. You may be new to picking a healthcare plan rather than just being like, the expectation is, okay, I'm just going to check some boxes and sign up online. Like, so you may be new to this, and so let's educate you or give you as much information as possible. Like, just these like little things that don't feel very little for folks that don't have that background.
So where I'm going is, even before a session, some pre-work and some of these questions that you're offering. How do we talk about it, if at all? How do you already intentionally have a class lens when you're working with clients, when you're making decisions? And even the minute way you went and say, if you're working in HR, how are you doing these things? And if you're a supervisor, how are you doing this? So it could be, that could be some pre-work, because it's, instead of an article for people to read, though that would be good too, it's almost like a checklist of really good, effective things we could be doing and just have people think about, so what are you already doing and what do you think else could be done in the organization? Could be great pre-work. The other pre-work, each time we start, you have this wonderful list of questions, which is basically, what's your class journey? Where did you first understand the concept of class? And I'll let you maybe share more. But I could imagine also sharing that ahead of time and asking people to do some reflections on some of those prompts so they come in because I'm anticipating people are going to feel nervous and anxious when they come in, and we're going to have to create the container for engaged dialogue. And so having some of these questions beforehand, they may be able to come in more readily able to share in smaller groups.
Yes. So how, I appreciate the, how do we create the container before the container starts in the like physical or virtual way? And those could be those reflective questions, or while it relates to higher education in the straddling, right, the straddling class book from Sanjay and I and these brilliant authors that contributed, there are some implications at the end, right, things to think about. And so that could even be used, like there's a list that we have around how class stuff shows up in organizational ways. And it's a, from an academic lens, but it could be, I mean, you could just change out some language. So there are some resources.
I love it. The other thing is if people do have that book or can make it available, people could read one or two chapters that relate to their life experience. So folks grew up poor, working class, middle class, white collar, professional class, upper middle, uber rich, and there's probably others in between. So they could read some of those. Now, the other thought as you were talking I had, there's so much about definitions that having people read them beforehand or have access to them might have people kind of, okay, I knew some of this, I just didn't have the word for it. Almost like at the Social Justice Training Institute, we ask people to read several pages of racism definitions beforehand so that there's a common knowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, that actually is a class intervention of some folks that have had more workshops around class or social justice may come in with more knowledge and terms, whereas others, we often don't give these workshops to folks who are not, quote, in white-collar professional jobs. And so that's another way to kind of level the playing field beforehand.
And I think even in that pre-work, so as you were talking, it would be critical to have something to say as you read this article or as you think about these questions, there may be some feelings of shame or guilt or embarrassment that come up as a result of it. And that's one of the pieces that we can engage in these sessions. Because what I would imagine, an example for me is I was going to SJTI when I was a youngin, and I was, I think the book was on my shelf somewhere, like Working Class in America. Mm. I think that was the book. And is parts of my family's story. And then I had this like rush of feelings and I'm on the plane and I'm crying, which I'm fine with. And, but I think to disclaim or to let them know some stuff may come up as you even just read these definitions or this article, and know that that is an okay thing. In fact, that's what often people experience, whether it's folks that grew up wealthy or owning class and feel this sense of guilt or even arrogance, right? Or folks that grew up poor who feel guilty or who feel embarrassed or ashamed. And so how do we let them know that these feelings may surface or it may bring us back to when you were five and you didn't have electricity, or you were five and you went to a country club. Have that be part of the process.
So good. I had a flash of literally you doing a couple welcome videos that people might be able to have access to. Just a welcome in general, and then here's some of the pre-work we wanted to do, and here's what could come up. I also had a vision of one maybe you and someone else doing, and then we want to reflect on these class pre-questions, what's your class story, and here's a straddling working class, now middle class, and here's someone kind of middle class, now upper middle. I mean, So I just wonder, even if they're 5 and 10 minutes that people can opt into if they want, as they learn differently. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea. One, because it brings the content to life, so to say. And there's so few videos or there's just so few resources with people talking about class where in some other identities, right? Like we've been talking about race for a really long time. It doesn't mean that we've gone too far, but there are so many TED Talks, right? There are so many ways that people can engage at least the content and some feeling spaces around race, maybe gender identity, but there's so few around class because it's such a taboo to talk about. So how do we destigmatize talking about class? I love that idea.
And so folks are listening, we just have a few minutes left. Becky, what if we highlight some of the questions? Because I'm envisioning literally the in-house facilitators could each do kind of 10 minutes of their class journey, get a couple leaders to do theirs so that they have 4, 5, or 6 different class backgrounds. And we can offer a few now and maybe after we come back from break, offer a few more. What are some of the prompts that either in these pre-videos as well as in the session, people could do journaling around and then affinity space to share? So what are some of the ones mm-hmm. that you think are just wonderful?
Well, it's the broad base, what's your class story? But you can get to more specifics. So what were some markers around class when you were growing up? How was class talked about or not talked about in your home or in your community? What did you notice in your community? Those could be some starting places for reflection. And then you can also bring it to current life, right? So how do you talk about class now? What are some of those markers, right? What is different than how you grew up? What feelings come up for you when you talk about class? So there could be, those are a lot of questions for a 3-minute video, but those could be some prompting questions for people to share a little bit of who they are or what class means to them.
I love it. A couple others that came up. How did you know? And that might be what you mean by markers, but I've heard so many people who grew up poor say, we didn't know we were poor until.
Totally.
And so when did you know? How did you know? I love all the feelings when you realized that society said you were, or what were the messages you got about the classes you were in, because you might have been in several over your times, the classes that other folks were in. Any and all of those listeners could get folks fully in their bodies, asking to journal beforehand and then come back and pretty early on maybe share those. Anything else that comes up as we are about to go to break?
Well, I would say those videos allow vulnerability and role modeling that it is okay to be vulnerable and talk about class. Because, we've been socialized to not do it and it's taboo. And so to see people outside, in your organization and outside of your organization talking about it allows you to breathe differently, to be okay, I can be vulnerable in my story around it and have it be upheld, have it be supported, have it be cared for, and have it be okay. So, yeah. Yes.
Well, when we come back from break, we'll do more. Back here with Transformation Change Radio, Drs. Kathy O'Bear and Becky Martinez. We'll see you on the other side.
Yep. Tune into 3 Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformation, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. 3 Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to transformationtalkradio.com or visit Susan's website at susandolce.com.
We are courageously expanding love on my new show, The Elizabeth Cunningham Show, every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join me and my guests where we talk about relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be but never thought were possible. Visit ElizabethAnnCunningham.com and subscribe.
Are you ready to manifest the highest version of your life? Then let Adrian Cobb guide you on your own personal soul quest. Every year, Adrian hosts 2 7-day virtual solstice quests and a 21-day soul quest to create a quickening in your soul's evolution. During the quest, your heart unravels and you remember the depth of your love. The essence of who you are is always wanting to be fulfilled. To learn more, visit mywildmagic.com. That is mywildmagic.com.
Currently happening in your life, reveal how your past is influencing your life experience. When you find the answers you are most hungry for in your life, you will gain inner peace and outer abundance. Contact Robin Clare to create an achievable plan for your ultimate success at clarity.com. That's clare-ity.com.
Champion your life with me, Leanne Champion, first and third Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit championyourlife.com and let's do this together.
So much fun with you, Dr. Becky Martinez, about how could we do workshops, whether they're formal workshops or questions outside of the work environment with family. We ended the first half thinking about, could you develop some videos where people are telling their class stories? And I had a quick thought at the end. Could you imagine if folks who are leaders doing this, HR, some of the facilitators, also talk about their personal passion for creating a much more inclusive, equitable, disrupting unproductive process dynamics, and also say, and here are three areas I think we need to look at because in our organization, we're not there yet.
Mm.
And have some of the people with positional power, class privilege in these videos say early, I'm concerned about our pay. I'm concerned about actually how our discipline system works. And I'm concerned about our hiring, that maybe we are classist in our hiring. And so those are three big areas I want us to look at moving forward. So,
yeah, and I would, it would be lovely too to have leaders say, this is what I struggle with. And we also want to look at like how people are treated based upon title or where your office is located, if you have one. Like, let's really kind of dig into the treatment piece of how class works out. Because we have pay, right? Like, we have pay and positionality. We're not getting rid of that. I don't see organizations getting rid of that. I've seen some organizations shift on, what time off looks like, what compensation looks like. For organizations that are not higher ed that do sabbaticals, right? Like those things I think can be really critical. So it could be a sabbatical regardless of what your position is. How do we look at like pay equity pieces? So I think that that's all important. And how do we like treat people that they are just as competent and skilled? Like let's talk about treatment of employees. So
if you've seen these workshops, privileged, marginalized, I'm going outside because most organizations have folks with class privilege way up here and the continuum, and folks who have less class privilege and positionality are almost invisible in the organization. So as you're saying, some organizations have made it more fair and equitable and gotten so that we're shrinking down the hierarchy and the resources and the respect and treatment. So all that could be pre and have people come in and we welcome and outcomes. And engaging agreements and all those good things we do, and then some warm-up activities, how you're feeling about being here, hopes, concerns. And then pretty early, I'm guessing, Becky, you have folks do the class journey that we talked about towards the end of the first half. And my memory when I went through a workshop is we journaled, and then we went into similar class affinity spaces to share this. And we were in there a while, or with three other people who, in my case, would have been grew up middle class, white collar professional class. And then we told our stories. What are some other ways that you have people doing that kind of class journey before we get to like definitions and stuff?
Yeah. Sometimes, so give them the prompts with some of those things that we even talked about from the video. So you could even use the prompts from the video to have them folks answer if they already haven't. And sometimes get them into mixed class groups, sometimes not. So the sticky part, right? And I think it's changed a little bit, at least from when I started doing like being a participant in some class-related activities, is the space of straddling class has become an identity. Do you want to talk about, I think, like it's delicious and delightful, like let's talk about class of origin, and then now let's talk about current class, and so where people shift and what that means. There is an activity that is, for me, it's a heavy hitter, and it's so good, and it's so difficult, is like line up and like of how you grew up around class. And so then you got to, it's awkward and uncomfortable, and people are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to do this. And it gets down to like these, as you said, some folks don't know until their referent group changes. Right? And that's what I love about Lou's work. So around social class worldview talks about like you don't know until there's a different framework. And so for some folks that happens at their first job, or that happens in college, or it happens, you know, when they change neighborhoods or get bused to a different school. And so you have one particular lens, and this is how I think all of it is, right? And then you go to somewhere else and you're like, oh my goodness, whether it is there are people who are struggling financially, or that, you know, are experiencing homelessness or hunger, or, there's like people who have yards and get to play in different ways. And so, so that activity like allows for some really deep conversation that brings up a lot of stuff. And then you could do the same activity, right? So what about your current class of origin and how you would line up? And that chickens. And then you just got to talk about, so how does this impact you, and how does this show up, and what is the meaning that you made? That's one that I really like to do. Sometimes you can do, you know, like just get into pair.
Mm.
So you can get into some more depth, and it's not as vulnerable for a lot of people. Sometimes one-on-one feels even more vulnerable for folks. There's checklists that you can do, and then pair up with somebody. So there's different ways that you can engage in that. But those would be some of the strategies that I use. And people, as you said, will stay in those stories for a long time, because most people, it's the first time. They could be 57 years old, and it is the first time that they've talked about that. And I have had people that are in deep emotion, just crying or still, because I've never, ever talked about this.
So folks listening, if you don't facilitate these ideas, you can share with folks who are experienced facilitators who then need to do classes and workshops as participants, and also be able to create a container for holding emotion and being with people who might hit some hot buttons to trigger and be expressing emotions, or be in emotion and not expressing them, because most folks, and if what we're going through, you're like, oh, my organization, then you can do a class lifeline, which is similar,
But again, pre-war, just have people from zero till now, what were your class, and literally draw a class journey, which is kind of like a class story, but they're drawing it, and then they could bring it. And that might feel easier to share more detail than how I was treated. So all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that as you listen, you're getting new ideas.
And Kathy, I want to add on that, like if you were to draw it or do kind of like a timeline, you could give some prompts, because most people will even struggle with, oh, well, what does that mean? And so you could be like, education, community, housing, language, right, geography, vacations, you know, so you can get into some real specifics so that it becomes so tangible for them. Because many times class can be really like nebulous and messy and I don't know. And so I think providing some specifics helps them realize. Yeah.
Clothes, food,
right.
Size of family,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Employment, I think you might have mentioned. So you can probably tell 1 or 2 days would not be enough. And what we've already outlined might already be 3 or 4 hours, or you can break it up into a couple where they're doing some getting to know each other, coming in, create the container, begin to share class stories. The next time, maybe more class stories with homework in between. Anything's possible. At some point, doing concepts and definitions. I know Becky has really talked about it earlier. What are some ways that people could help others learn those in a workshop or a sitting at lunch place?
Mm-hmm. You know, I imagine sitting at lunch space. Thanks for bringing that up. And so maybe there's some prompts or pre-work or something around various forms of capital. So one, what are the definitions of class and the strata? And that's where it becomes complicated, because whose definition are we using? Mm-hmm. Are we using it from the government? So becoming more clear in your organization around like what definitions are you working from? And I would advise that you work from definitions that are beyond the like the economic government one, or you're going to be stuck in an SES or economic financial capital space, and broaden that. Please like use a brushstroke on class. Don't let it just be one particular color or one particular stroke. And then you have these different forms of capital, right? Social capital, cultural capital, academic capital, language capital, financial, economic capital. Brought up emotional capital.
That's good.
And I was like, oh, way to engage class. And then, you know, you can give some examples of how those play out, or give an example. I think academic capital, we know degrees, where our degrees are from, what our degrees are in. That is often weaponized in mm-hmm. academic settings and in some organizations. And so depending upon the industry, really thinking about how do we weaponize academic capital. And then you have like language. Like I noticed that I have said probably 4 curse words in the last 45 minutes. And how does that even land on the listeners right now? Like, is she supposed to, like, is it okay if she says shit? Right? Like, you know, what I think of people when they say certain things, it's usually curse words, or maybe slang or jargon. And how does that show up organizationally, and who's listened to or not listened to? And then, you know, social capital is very much like who I'm having relationships with, right? What are my like mentoring or informal relationships with folks, networking? Cultural capital is the information that we know, like how do we know things? And what is it that we know, and what's valued in regards to knowledge? So, and then you can have them like, okay, so talk about this. Like, how does this play out in the organization or your unit or as a supervisor or as a leader? And sometimes it feels more safe to have that conversation in levels. And I don't want to stay safe. Like, I don't want people to be uncomfortable. But like, you may be able to get some similar to race, like get into some affinity space in like positionality in your organization, and then be able to do a cross class. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because if we expect the cross class to happen soon, that shit's almost impossible, and it does not go well.
Yeah, and folks with less class privilege and classless experiences in their lives actually get the brunt of it, and I would think that would the harm cost. When you're talking, have you ever heard, I just come, life experience capital, common sense capital. Have you ever heard of those?
I have not.
I just made them up. They're probably somewhere. But here's what I was thinking. All the ones you named, how I grew up and then my elite education, I had access to all those. Not as much as some others. But I'm thinking of most organizations, 60-80% of the organization might be folks who grew up poor, working class, and might still be in jobs that are not paid much more than $40,000-$50,000. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if adding those, if y'all are listening, because some folks are like, I got street smarts, I got growing up in this neighborhood smarts, and if they're in affinity space to say, I may not have academic or social capital with the leaders, but I know the people we serve because I'm in the community with them, and it's not valued in organizations, but I have all kinds of capital this organization could value better, and I could help this organization be more successful if we did the kind of life experience. So that's why I got there.
Well, and that actually, Kathy, fits very nicely and appropriately into cultural capital.
I love it.
Right? But often we think about cultural capital as like intellectual knowledge or like book knowledge, and that's not necessarily the case. So if we look at the community cultural wealth model, and I think cultural capital is a part of that, like it does not, it is not referring to academics. And so even how do we reframe what cultural capital is in a class lens? Because it's like, I don't care how many books that you read, like, do you know how often you have to, like, water the citrus trees, right? Or, like, how you do irrigation systems, right? Or how you lay cement. Like, that is cultural capital. Like, that's knowledge. And depending upon where it's valued and how it's valued. So, like, let's think about that. Like, I don't know how to systematically, like, be as most efficient to clean a hotel room. And like, how do we value that as cultural capital? So I would say that, like, let's reframe and put some more depth into these spaces of capital.
And so what you just described, concepts, definitions, affinity space, come back, share, how does this play out in organization, could be a whole nother chunk of it, 2-4 hours. Just breathe, y'all, if you're listening. This is not a one and done. That's what capitalism says. I'll bet most people want to get to, but what do we do if? But all that we've done so far helps people be more successful to recognize classist microaggressions at the interpersonal level, in the culture and the climate, when someone says, you know, they actually, their genes were a little tight, that we can't hire them. I mean, so those kind of comments in hiring. And so what are some ways that we can raise people's awareness of the thousands of types of microaggressions that happen that are negatively impacting people, particularly with less class privilege and less kind of status in an organization or in society?
I mean, there's so many microaggressions that are connected to just the word and definition of professional and professionalism. And so let's really interrogate just that word and the expectations of people to show up professional. How do we define professional? Even this morning when I woke up, I was like, oh, it's hot because it's 103 here. I'm going to wear something that doesn't have sleeves and my tattoos will show, and what are people holding around that. But, you know, I'm on this show and I'm introduced as Dr. Martinez and people have my credentials. And so that balances out these tattoos, and these tattoos are fairly safe because they're pretty and they're butterflies and they're flowers. And so that's going to be received different than if it was like old English letters or something like really harsh, or that people connect to prison or gangs or
right. Yeah.
And so like, how do we talk about like, so I think microaggressions all the time around tattoos, around what folks wear, what's appropriate, how people talk, how we talk with them about how they talk. But yeah, so professional, so much microaggressive behavior happens just with that particular word.
One of my shortcomings is I like to do everything at once. And so when I hear you, that could be how you start, right?
Right.
What does professional mean and how is it used here that could keep some people out and some people in? Another couple ideas is people could Google classist examples and just start your own list, and you could create your own. There are organizations that actually have handouts like Class Action and others, that so you don't have to recreate the wheel, but you might find them. But I was wondering, if your organization is large enough, could you do an anonymous survey, say, what are the kinds of comments, actions, how are people treated based on level and title and position? What's the unwritten rules of the organization? What's the climate and culture like for people that might have a relation to your status, your position, your class background? And just see what you collect up, and maybe have some folks that can be trusted to say, I'm going to collect them up and just turn them into generic situations.
That
could be, here are 10 situations that people said happen here. What would we do if? When these happen, what could we do? And so that could be 2 to 3 sessions. And to be honest, that would get people, what about this and this? So if you've ever done a racism workshop with me, I literally have 3 or 4 pages of common racist microaggressions that I have people read as pre-work. To be honest, I like long lists, and I might be creating one around class and classism. But for folks that are like, way too much, something like that. And then what could you do if, and some practice to get the speaking up. We just have 5 minutes left. Anything else on this before we go to systemic a bit?
Well, I think, what I loved is you said I'm a list for, like, I love lists. But, and I also think that that's some classist shit right there. And maybe that feels very academic, right, which then can be connected to. And I love your long list, Kathy, so, like, hear me. Because I'm like, oh, I never thought about that. And I think that there's some, it can land on folks very worked. Like, I could think of some of my cousins who are laborers, and they'd be like, I want this damn list. Right? And so I, like, how do we think about that? Right? Like, how about this? Who is the list for?
Love it.
So that just came to me now. Like, who is the list for?
So these lists could be pre-work, but as you said that, I could imagine folks with more class privilege positionality will need lists.
Got it. Okay.
Or we choose not to know. So that could be, we're going to do some affinity space. You have some, you want to do storytelling about what you've experienced. And if you're more management and above, and you're like, I want to see what are, and then everybody has it in the handout. So, but so to your point, kind of things that really happen here.
Yeah.
I
love that.
We may have to do another one of these because we're almost out of time.
I know. I know we only have a few minutes. I think microaggressive behavior, one of the things that happened in the pandemic, and I was guilty of it, is I would talk about how my body hurt so much from sitting. And then it's like people have been doing, like my mom's been sitting for 4 years in a job in a chair at a front desk. But it became this like, oh, my body, I've been sitting for so long, I need a new chair. And there have been people who've been sitting, that are sitting in your organization that have been sitting for 20 to 30 years. And we had not thought about the impact on body until middle class plus folks were doing the same thing and were in pain. Like, whew.
As we close, this whole concept of intent and impact when we're doing microaggressions, your story example is wonderful, Becky, of, because you may have just said it, and then people on, so to spend time as we're doing workshops to have people know, regardless of our intent, when we say things, they have an impact across class dynamics. And so to then be able, so what happens in the moment if we've said something that has a negative impact, how do we have that conversation?
Oh,
that might be where we start our next one, where we do part two of this.
Mm-hmm.
As we close out, you would really wanted to share, what have we been learning as we together, the impact of doing this? We have a couple minutes. I don't know if you want to go there or go somewhere else.
So the learning has been so deep. Mm. Like there are assumptions that I had. There are pieces I didn't think about. Ease, like the ease of class privilege. I'd never heard that as, to hear your story, like pieces of your story. I think the learning for me, the learning together with you has been really important. And for us to have really authentic dialogue, to build our capacity to talk about class individually and systemically, that's been delightful for me.
I join on all, and as I come from much more class privilege then and I think now, I feel less guilt and shame just naming the truth. And I think that's what we need to do in our organizations, as you've taught me, is just to be able to talk about class without the guilt, shame, especially class privilege, to not hold on to it and be like, are there ways that we can really make this more equitable and fair? And when we do part two, we'll do so much more.
Yeah, so good.
We have to close out.
Yes. So thank you for holding with us. Stay in it. Ask some questions to yourself. Think about how class shows up and how you lead and supervise and your expectations. And this has been delightful. We hold you till the next one.
Go well.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound over on I-5 southbound near the off-ramp to Lakeway Drive. Around Mopolis 253, a recent disabled vehicle partially blocking that ramp. Good thing the State Patrol has arrived on the scene and they are taking care of that disabled vehicle. And stay tuned coming up next. After the news weather, it's the Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By, and it's a meeting with Greta, Lee, Yvonne, and the Realm of Beings. Stay tuned.
ABC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The Northeast is bracing for record-breaking heat this week. The heat wave will be expanding over the Northeast today, pushing afternoon high temperatures 10 to 15 degrees above normal by Thursday. Daily high records could be broken from Kentucky to New England. The suspect of a 4th of July parade shooting north of Chicago is pleading not guilty. Robert Cremo III appeared in court today, almost a month after the shooting that left seven dead and at least 30 others injured in Highland Park. The number of fatalities from flooding in Kentucky is unchanged Wednesday, staying at 37 in five counties.
The people are pulling through, putting supplies in their car. Help has truly shown up.
Governor Andy Beshear praised Kentuckians for helping each other through the crisis in a news conference updating on the floods. He added that the hot weather is the current biggest concern since many have lost power in their homes. Arizona's Republican primary for governor is too close to call.
This is why we have the biggest movement in Arizona.
Fox News says as of this morning, former TV news anchor Carrie Lake has less than a two-point lead over real estate developer Karen Taylor Robeson. Lake is endorsed by former President Trump, and Taylor Robeson has been endorsed by former Vice President Mike Pence. The winner will likely face Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs in the general election. Health risks posed by COVID are causing more smokers to quit. A new study from the University of California, San Diego said regular smokers purchased much fewer cigarettes and a considerable amount quit during the pandemic. Researchers said the increased awareness of health risks associated with smoking could have led many to change their habits. The husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is pleading not guilty to DUI charges. Multimillionaire Paul Pelosi was charged after he allegedly rammed his Porsche into a Jeep last May in Napa Valley. Fox News reports at the time of his arrest, he gave officers a card that indicates he donates to police charities. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Raise a puppy and change a life. Guide Dogs for the Blind is the largest guide dog school in North America. But our mission can only be accomplished with the help of our valued volunteers who usher our puppies down the path to becoming a guide dog. We provide a community of support to allow you to give back while being paid in unconditional love. It is a job that is both warm and fuzzy. Become a volunteer puppy raiser today. Learn more at guidedogs.com/puppy.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. We'll see mostly cloudy skies for most of the morning, gradually clearing by this afternoon to sunny skies. At temperatures around 75, 76 degrees. We'll also have a little bit of wind out of the south to southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, clouds with a slight chance of rain showers actually moving in off the coast. Low temperatures down to about 60. For Thursday, clouds and light rain making way to partly sunny skies by Thursday afternoon. High temperatures around 69, 70. Mostly clear skies for Thursday night. Lows back down to about 55. For Friday and running up into the weekend, more sunshine expected. High temperatures back on the ups. High temperatures around 75 for Friday and making way to the low 80s by Sunday.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are having a meeting today. We're having a meeting. It's a meeting with Retta, Lee, and Yvonne. The realm of beings are also going to join us. For those of you that already know who these amazing people are, then you already know that they have a fabulous hit show. And we are talking about that conversation and that show, but we're also talking about what the message is for the world we live in today. What I love about this is for you all to get to know them again, as you've done, Dr. Gunnar Chamberlain, of course, Yvonne Crayer, of course. We're talking about people that, you know, for Greta, it's, what do you think about remote energy transformation specialists? What do you think about that? How about her being an educator? How about her being someone who channels the non-physical entities known as the realm of beings? They may be here today. I don't know. We have to see. But then being joined by two other amazing people, you know, an artist, a visionary, Yvonne, a spiritual wisdom keeper. You know, this is what we're talking about, raising the bar, high energetic frequencies, all of the above. We're getting this in place at a young age. And then there's Lee. Lee Sima, we're talking about Lee, who I have to explain, I have to say this. When I first met Lee and I saw her taking the helm in their show and being so open and willing to do it, of course, her intuition, she's a guide. But when I see the evolution of both Lee and everybody else in the show, you now have a great show. You now have three people that when they show up, when they come to the stage to do their show, I just want you all to know this, when they show up to do that show, and you're going to find out when that show is, magic happens. If you happen to be one of the lucky people that's going to get to have a conversation with the realm, fasten your seatbelts. Because I know, like, when I watch the show and I watch Greta and then I watch Yvonne, I watch, and everybody's like, wow, what did the realm just say? And we have got a lot to talk about today. I want to welcome you all to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Now, look, today's show, I'm meeting with you all, conversations about the creation of reality, it is really an important conversation. I mean, it's important in so many ways. And, you know, part of what I want to start out with is how wonderfully this movement has grown. I call it a movement because the idea of understanding reality, who creates it, how it gets created, was not even a thing when I started doing the show 20 years ago. It was kind of out there, like, for a few people that had it. I don't know, like, who, like, maybe the Dalai Lama or somebody, I don't know. But now the conversations about this have gotten greater, 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 spill over to the mainstream, spill over to the pop culture, but yet we still don't understand the power of it. And so let's have a conversation, and I'm going to start with you, Greta, if I can.
Yes.
And then I just want to go around to everybody, because I like this. What is your experience, the ups, the downs, the sideways, the topsy-turvy, the straight line and the roller coaster about discovering the reality of what we are? What did you all discover about that for yourselves? That idea, reality, what are you? Greta, what has this been like for you?
The first time I came upon it or created for it to come to me, I didn't believe it. There was no way that I was going to believe that some of the stuff that I had experienced in my life, that I created it. There was no way.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the very first time, at the gathering.
There we go. And I told my teacher, my mentor, I said, you have got to be kidding. There is no way. You're not going to tell me that, you know. And not only that, but that I created my reality at that time. It was just at the time of me being born, I started to create the reality. And I think we'll get to it as we go through the program. But then we talk about the creation of reality before you are born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But oh, that's what it was for me, because I've had a lot of experiences that people would find very challenging that occurred in my life. And I chose to come into this experience, into this reality, being cared for by a single mother who had challenges herself. So I grew up being taught that I was no good, because she would always say that to me, you're no good, Greta. So that started my journey of practicing not being good. And then when you're practicing not being good, you're practicing not loving yourself. When you're not practicing loving yourself, then you're not practicing or recognizing the divinity that you are.
Wow. And, you know, I love that you shared that because, you know, we are really tapping into the fact that there are many, many people that have had experiences growing up, but they don't have a solution. See, that's why I love what you all do, is because you provide answers to people, that don't even understand the question. And that's why I love talking about reality, because one of the things we all know is reality is so impersonal, and we're going to talk about that. I want to hop over to Lee. Can I hop over to you, Lee?
Sure. I mean, creating your own reality. What? So, I mean, it's a journey, of course. You know, I think there's something, you know, with everything we learn, right? We have to be in an open place. We have to be in a place where our cells and we are physically able to accept another kind of information that, I mean, we are creating for ourselves. So if you're in this sort of, you know, this group of consciousness where you're learning about these ideas and tools, you know that you're creating that awareness for yourself, for your own understanding. Mm-hmm. And you create that when you're ready to hear it and when you're ready to listen, or maybe you create it when you're not exactly ready to hear it at that moment. But we have to all start somewhere, right? Yeah. So we have to challenge our beliefs, right? If that is about us, our growth. And as Greta says, we are the force, and that's a big thing to take in also, because we've been, you know, told we're small for so long, or so we have to start. And if you're hearing this, you know, you're ready to embody what we're trying to share. And I mean, I am always a student. I'm always trying to learn, because being in some other kind of belief system for so many decades, it's a transition. So take your time with it and be kind with yourself. So that's sort of where I am. And, you know, Greta shared her mother saying she's no good. I was told not to cry, that crying wasn't okay. So in my early upbringing, I guess that kind of led to me negating my emotions and not feeling allowed to speak my truth. So maybe that's all what we're trying to get back to a little bit, is finding what our own inherent truth is and remembering who we are as best we can for what we're ready for.
I love this. We're going to have so much fun today. Thank you for sharing that. Because the three of you, when I first met you and you came together, each of you had special and unique gifts. And I've watched the evolution of this in the show. And I've watched the evolution of each of you individually, but together, how powerfully. Yvonne, for you, right? I mean, the reality that you're sitting here doing this show, and we're talking about the show you three do, that's a reality in itself, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I am. The name of our podcast is Shifting Impressions, and boy, oh, boy, did I make a shift. I think we all did, and continually make a shift. But it's not easy doing that inner work. I think what we teach is just facing some of these challenges and accepting them and taking responsibility for them, however they are in your life, and knowing that you can empower yourself. You are empowered already to change, to shift. If you don't like something, just change it. I mean, it sounds so simple. It is not that simple to do the work, but it is definitely possible, because your thoughts drive everything. And if you can change your thoughts and change the emotions behind those thoughts, that thought's energy, your whole reality is going to shift and change for the better. So, yeah, my backstory is, yeah, probably not too different than anybody else's. I was dropped. It could be a little different. I was dropped off at the convent at 5, and because I wouldn't talk, you know, like it was back in the 60s, and like that was, I guess, what they did when you had a child that was emotionally little, you know, like on whatever was going on. I don't know. But yeah, that reality exists. They all, every reality kind of exists all at the same time. And like, that's still a part of me. So, you know, like, I don't dwell on it anymore, but it did drive a lot of, unnecessary kind of challenges and suffering, but we're all here now and that's what matters, right? Going through changing and shifting.
Not only are we here now, we're here in big time. So let me just plant the seed for what we're about to talk about next. And Benny, we're going to go ahead and skip the break. So for 20 years, I've been talking about things that people were thinking about, okay, she's lost her mind. That's okay. If you think I'm from another planet, that's okay today for that to happen. I think the four of us sitting here, probably people have some sort of sense of that. But we've learned a lot, and we learned it through your teaching. The fact that you do a podcast. I remember do you all remember when we first met and it was Greta? Do you remember Greta? When I said to Greta, oh, it's not just podcast, it's video. Do y'all remember that? I think I lost Lee. Lee was gone. I think Lee didn't even show up for the next meeting or something. But that was a new reality.
Yeah.
And yet, that was a perfect reality for what you wanted to create. You see? See, this is what I kind of want to talk about with you all is, we create these thoughts of what we want in the world and what the vision is. And let me ask you, I'm going to hop back to Greta, and I love all of you talk about this. But let's talk about reality in the making, how we create them, how it comes to be. Because this idea of reality being impersonal, I learned that the hard way. I don't know how you all learned it, but I learned that if I have a reality that is so far away from what I really desire, and I'm holding on to, who said it, belief system. I'm holding on to a vision of it. I'm thinking I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm blah, 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 blah. I get more of that. And this is what we're talking about. But you know what I love, Greta, about what you do with the realm? You see, 20 years ago, I made a prediction. I can't remember the show. The show wasn't even the Dr. Pat show. And I said something like, just give this time and you will see our pop culture change massively. And it'll be in the theater and in the movies. And it will bring in and remind us of origins that are so embedded in our DNA. Everybody talking about the multiverse, but Greta, you live it, don't you?
Yes, I do.
It is so prominent, but I love it because let me ask you this question. How do we create a reality? You see, I'm thinking about television series, everything on Netflix, blockbuster movies. You know, we are going to the movies now. Once upon a time, like, Yvonne, I'm with you about I got to Catholic boarding school when I was age 5, but I got kicked out. Right. That was just not going to work for them. But you see, we create this. I want to ask you this, Greta, because we create it as individuals, but then also doesn't that individual momentum, energy affect a bigger picture, a more global version of humanity?
Definitely. Because we have to go back. We deal with the unconscious. And you're going to see me use the pronoun and hear me use the pronoun we, because I'm so connected to them now. And I know they're speaking through me all the time, you know. So it's regardless if I'm stepping back and they're speaking through my physical vehicle, but they're still speaking. So we have to go back to the force. And what we're teaching is that the force is the energy that has created everything in existence. Because different species, they create the reality of their own quote-unquote God, however they define it for their universe, something that is outside of them. Like Lee and I were talking today about part. We're a part of the force. But, and I was saying to her, no, we're not. We're not a part of the force. Now, this is the part that Yvonne was talking about, and you're saying, you know, people are going to say, well, what the heck, you know, because we're looking at everybody as the force. You're the force to me. You're not part of the force. You're it. That's, and so the realities that we create, you know, they call it experiential evolution. So the force is experiencing itself. I asked somebody once, I said, what's the energy? You know, they do Reiki, they do all this energy work. I said, what's the energy you use? What is it? Everybody sat there and just looked at me. Because, you know, they're using energy and they don't understand what energy they're using.
Mm-hmm.
See? But they're using the energy of the force. The force is lending itself for it to experience itself through us, which, and we are it. You see, we're not separate. So then we come into the lessons. The force wants to experience experiential evolution, as I just said. So it's their lessons are there. In some books people write, it says, well, you choose your lesson. But they're meaning that me as Greta, Greta's choosing her own lesson. Dr. Pat is choosing her lesson. But in actuality, it's the force that chose the lessons, and we're in it as the force, you see. So consequently, it's right there. So we're committed. We decide to go from an energy essence and then move into the incarnate stage, and at the incarnate stage is where we put together all of these realities. See, we start creation of reality prior to going into the womb. Going into somebody's womb is just part of our creation of reality. Our creation of reality starts before that. Some people recognize it because they remember what it was like when they were in that incarnate stage and they were put choosing their parents, choosing what they wanted to look like, choosing their personality. This is all part of creation of reality. Everything about me, from my eyeglasses to the scarf on my around my neck, is my creation of reality. Yeah. Everything that's behind me that people are seeing who are watching this live, that's my creation of reality. And I think we'll get into that a little bit later.
We're going to get into it because, you know, what you're opening up the door, and I'm going to just hop back over to you, Yvonne. I'm going to hop to you now next. Is that there is this sense from time to time in our human experience as we move forward that all is wrong, all is despair, I have no choices, I can't do it. And yet, if you're fortunate enough to get a little insight on some of what you're talking about, on the force and the energy and the dynamics and what we're bringing forward, you know, I mean, there's a reason that we created something called deja vu outside of the movie The Matrix. There's a reason that there is a deja vu moment. I don't know many people that don't understand what that is. You're walking in a hallway and you're like, oh, my God, I've been here before. No, you haven't been there before, but you have been there before. Right? You're right? You walk into an office building, but you've never been before. And you get, you know what that deja vu feeling's like? Does everybody, do y'all know what I'm talking about? That feeling when it just gets in you, it's like in you. And you're like, I've been here. No, I've never been building in Pittsburgh before, but I have.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I want to kick it to you, Yvonne, because, and please, let's take a moment to let people know how they can find out about your podcast. Tell them when it's on, because this is just a little taste, and then we'll go over to Lee.
Yeah, well, our podcast, once again, is called Shifting Impressions, Conversations with the Realm of Beings, and we are
Live on Transformation Talk Radio every Friday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. And we have a show that we pick apart, you know, quotes that have been downloaded through Greta from the realm of beings. And every week it's an adventure. We talk about the quotes and just kind of teach about them. And then the last part of the podcast, we're fortunate enough to have the realm join us to weigh in on what the quotes are. But yeah, just to comment back on your deja vu experience, we all, I mean, I think the more aware we become, the more it seems like the more of these experiences we do have. And it's really, I kind of like describe it as being in the flow, being fully present, being conscious of where you are, so that those realities that are existing at all times and all places, and it's not just like the past was the past, present is now, the future is out there. Everything is simultaneous. So like that's why you kind of quickly remember that experience wherever it was in Pittsburgh, but your body is physically in Seattle or in Philadelphia or wherever. But it's we just have to remember that we're all energy. That's what we are at all times, and energy is everywhere. So like we're not just body here or a body over there. Yeah. So that's my little weigh-in on that.
Boy, well, this is going to get so good. We're really, we're warming up now. Is this show an hour, Benny, or two? Lee, let me go back to you. Creating reality. So you all came together and you created the reality of this program, right? You created your show. Then you modified it. Then you grew with it. Then it evolved. Then it exponentially through, I love the whole quote thing from the realm. I mean, I go back and I watch these shows and I'm just like, I know there's a lesson. This is me now. This is like, now you all got to school me on whether I'm creating a false reality or a real one. But Lee, kick in here, because there are messages we are meant to hear in this world today. You created this. Every one of you said yes to this, not really knowing what the yes like looks like. Is it like vanilla ice cream? Is it strawberry? What is it? But you knew it was right, Lee. You knew it was right, even if it was uncomfortable. What were some of the influences that either guided you, directed you to the creation of your reality in the world for yourself today?
Maybe, especially as you mentioned earlier, the idea of a podcast was something of an idea out there that Greta had.
I think I waited to even tell you it was video. I think I held back a little bit, maybe, I think,
right.
On that. Right.
So that was something. So Greta planted a seed, and I said, oh, sure, sure. And then when you were talking about, oh, video, oh, okay. And then the next part that happened was, oh, we're on AM radio. There's actually people driving in their car listening to this. Oh, come on. So many of these things, I would have to say, were an unconscious creation. There was something in my unconscious creating that. In my conscious thoughts, I was thinking that I needed to push myself out of my comfort zone. And this new experience, this new creation was a way for me to do that and try something that I perhaps was not ready for consciously, but I knew that I had to push through that fear.
Yeah.
And just,
yeah. We're going to take a break. We're going to get back to this, and I think I may even start with you, Lee, when we come back, because
I love these conversations, but there is a reality to the word we're speaking today, and it affects all of us and affects the people listening. For those of you out there, I don't know if the realm is going to join us today, but I will tell you, if you have got a question for these three amazing women, this is the time for you to give us a shout, 1-800-930-2819. Here's the question for you when you're thinking about calling in. Are you creating the reality you want, or do you think you're creating a reality you don't want? We're going to give you some guidance on that. What if I were to say to you, whatever your reality is, it at some point was a reality you wanted. Really? I did want that. I wanted that bankruptcy. Oh, I wanted that narcissistic relationship. Oh, did I really want that? Now, when we come back, I'm going to get schooled by all three of these amazing women. Benny, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Love to tell you about the latest technology of the Volara company. I've been using the Volara company equipment, the air machines, since 1992, and I have found them to be totally successful in killing mold, mildew, and keeping your house fresh and clean. If you'd like more information on it, you can look at MaryJaneMack.com or call our office at 888-777-4232.
Tune into the Dr. Diane Show, where we explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I bring over 20 years of expertise as a mindset warrior, perspective shifter, and unshakable optimist dedicated to helping you reach your wildest dreams in business, health, performance, and relationships. Join the discussion on the show. Learn more about me, Dr. Diane, and receive a free digital copy of my magazine at naturalnutmeg.com.
There isn't a magic pill to creating your healthy lifestyle, yet it doesn't have to be hard or feel impossible. Health works from the inside out, connecting both your body and your mind. Georgette LePage lives and breathes what she teaches, so allow her to be living proof of what can work for you. Connect with her now for a free 30-minute discovery session to see what results you are looking for and how she can help you get them. Visit GeorgetteLePage.com.
Are you struggling with truly being happy in life? Do you often question who you really are? I'm Tracy Lynn Wallace, a self-love mentor and life coach who can help you identify and access subconscious blocks to move you into a place of freedom, success, and happiness. Visit inspiredwisdomcoaching.com to sign up for my VIP list and get updates on my exclusive workshops so you can awaken your magic within. That's inspiredwisdomcoaching.com.
Optimize your breast cancer screening without any radiation or pain. Effective, sensitive, and widely used thermal imaging in Europe is now available to you here in the U.S. Using state-of-the-art FDA-approved camera, Eastside's first and only breast thermography clinic is now open in Bellevue. Safe, sensitive, low cost, no referrals needed. Contact Holistic Medical Center at 425-451-0404 or on the web, drdarvish.com.
On a Saturday night in the summer, sundown and they all come out. Lamborghinis and they're in it humming. The party's on, so they're heading down.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's so great to tune us in and turn us on. You know, I love it. I want to just get back to some information. Greta, let me go to you if we can. And I want to make sure you all understand, go to Transformation Talk Radio every Friday at 8 a.m. Go to Facebook.com, Transformation Talk Radio. You're going to see them. For those of you that get the show in Australia, because we send this over there, okay, you know what we're talking about. But the point is this. Please check this out, because every show, there is something, whether it's a quote or a conversation, that will bring you to a sense, a new reality for you to contemplate. But Greta, what is the best way for people to find out about you? I think there's a website you have, right?
Right. We call it Greta's House. There's some videos on it that I made a while back, not too far back. I think they're good. They're videos that are good for people that are just beginning to touch this concept, because it will go back and review some of the early things, like thoughts are things. That so I think that would be good for mm-hmm. people to begin, but it's gretashouse.com.
Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. I mean, there's the one there that I think I popped in recently where you do a thing on how to create your own reality. Right. I love the forum deal that you set up there. So, you know, this is just one other way that people that are listening to this can tune in. I mean, if you go look at some of these videos, you're going to get a conversation about reality, law of attraction, everything's energy, and don't forget to do to watch the one on the fourth. Don't forget to take a look at some of these. But it all ties into what we're talking about today, and I want to get back to this because during the break I made a comment. I don't know how true the comment is, but my sense is that there are people that have exponentially grown, like shot out of a cannon.
Mm-hmm.
After COVID, like mm-hmm. they're shot. They may not have a direction. They don't know where they're going to land, but there's something that changed. How do we know this? We've created a thing called the Great Resignation. Okay. What does that even mean? It means people are resigning from work and they're not going to their jobs. I call it the Great Resurrection because I think people are like, oh, wait a minute. That thing that I was living called life, that is not for me. So I want to ask you this question. Are these people changing the reality? Are they beginning to get it? And changing the reality for a lot of people, Greta, is, oh, I can't do that. Dr. Greta, tell us about change your reality. Where does it get us? Where do we go? And do we need a seatbelt?
Sometimes you do need a seatbelt. Sometimes you need about 5 seatbelts. You know, to create. I think the first thing is to make some decisions about what you want to do with your life, you know, in reference to what you just said. What do I want to do with my life? People always are asking me, Greta, what is my purpose? I want to find my purpose. I tell them, I said, your purpose is not to be a teacher. It's not to be the president. It's not to be a billionaire. The first thing is to love self. And that may seem so simplistic, but that is so meaningful. Because when you love yourself, see, your creations of reality are going to come to you that support you in loving you. Because if you're in a situation that that can be very abusive, that means, but you don't want to be there. Start focusing, I love myself. Even if that's the only thing you say, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself. And you're going to see that things are going to change. Because the people, see, it's create, support, support, create. That concept is very simplistic. And it's throughout the universe. And it is throughout existence. Because I've had to deal with other species. And they go through the same thing. Create, support, support, create. Like I know one in particular, I said, why are you creating this for yourself? And I had to go in to examine that. He's not even humanoid, but he's going through the same thing. That's why I know the whole existence, because they're over 500 universes. The universes go into infinity. Infinity is so huge, you can't even see the end of it.
Mm.
See? So we're a very small microcosm of it. But the thing is that for us to understand that anything that you don't want, you can change it. How do you change it? The basis is going to be love yourself. Well, how do I do that? I tell people, go do something. Like we have an exercise that we give people. Do something that shows that you love yourself every day.
Yeah.
What do you do today? What am I going to do the next day? What am I going to do on Wednesday? Maybe it's just to go get a massage. Maybe it's just to walk near the beach. Doesn't have to cost you any money. Do something that shows that you love you. Now, that's the beginning of the change.
I love you said that. Okay, we're going to go to Yvonne because I want to talk about how do you change the reality you don't want. Now, look, can I give you a pop culture reference? Would it be too over the top if I did it? A real reference to what Dr. Greta, you just said. There's a real live reference. She's called Rihanna. Rihanna is known as a pop singer. Mm-hmm. This is a woman that if you followed her early years, loving herself was not going to be what showed up. Everything from the choices she made, the romantic choices she made. So here's my point to your point, which is very practical and definitely not from the realm. When you watch her, and it's been such an honor to watch her grow and evolve and get to the place where you could see she went from, I don't love myself, to I'm getting to love myself. And when she did that, her life's trajectory changed and her net worth went from, I am just a pop star, and now today I am the owner of Fenty and I'm worth $1.4 billion. And I do not think she would have got there if she didn't make that transition, but that's just my little practical example. We all have that in us, Yvonne, don't we? We all have Absolutely. The ability in us to walk out of relationships where people are beating us, love ourselves enough to do that, and then create what we want. Go ahead, Yvonne.
Well, it's in our DNA. It's a seed. Our genius is, our creativity is in us. It's in all of us, and all we have to do is nurture it and give ourselves the love that we deserve. And it will. It's. I like to use the garden. I am a big gardener, and I watch from the very beginning of the season planting one little seed, which, you know, a tomato seed. It turns into a plant, which turns into massive amounts of fruit, and then each fruit contains, a gazillion millions of seeds. So just the same thing, like in within us, it's just that one little seed that can, you know, you just nurture it with the sun and whatever. And like Greta said, you just are, just pick something. Like I like yoga and I like hot yoga. It's not for everybody, but I will go practically every single day because that's what gives me my juice to feel that, you know, a little bit better about my body. And that's where I get stuck sometimes is in the body. And like when I can work out my issues on the mat and sweat them out with all that heat, it's my way of showing love to myself, and everything looks great then after that. And just love yourself, forgive yourself for whatever things that you were happened, maybe, unconsciously through your upbringing, your parents and school and teachers, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's always things that, you know, you feel slighted about something, and, be able to like let that go and look at it as a lesson and a way to evolve. You know, it's a process, like you said, Rihanna. I mean, like we can all, if that's what we want. I mean, maybe that's not for everybody, but it is for her and other people out there, there's other ways to express creativity. And even if it is very simple at home, just, whatever that you choose to be, just a stay-at-home mom or a teacher or whatever, nothing is to be discounted. Mm-hmm. Everything is honored and love is the answer.
It is. I love the Rihanna story. And you all have to go Google this yourself to see what I'm talking about, because she just didn't start a company. She went back to her roots. She honored her culture. She wouldn't have been able to do that if she didn't get to a deep place of love within herself. Lee, I want to get to you, Lee, because here's what I love about what both Dr. Greta, what Greta said, Yvonne said. I listen to your show, and I have to reflect on this. Every time I listen to your show, I almost feel like I have to take another hour, like I have to stop. I almost don't schedule anything after your shows because I have to stop. And, because I get hit with this. So here's what I want to say. I know the four of us here, and people listening, I know they know the possibility of this. But I want to say this, and you can correct me. All y'all can just chime in. the change of my reality for somebody like me, and I would like to know that for you, Lee, I had to look at my parents' history, being born in this world by a mother that was drinking and using drugs, my own addiction, making a decision that I had to change something. Now, I have to tell you, if I knew what I know now and what we're talking about here, I think that change may have been easier, but maybe not. Have you had to do something similarly? You know, what I'm talking about is we're in a life. I never thought I could change my life. I never thought I would be able to get out of the rut I was in, alcohol, drugs, being homeless, the whole thing. And then one day I did. But don't ask me how. Lee, how is it for you?
Well, I think it's important to note that, and this is one thing we talked about on one of the podcasts, that, you know, maybe the first act of self-love is to acknowledge that whatever you're creating is okay.
Yep.
To not beat yourself up about what is there, because you know what is there in this moment is changeable if that's what you desire. And if it is not what you desire, that's okay too, because there's wisdom embedded in every situation, right, that we create in our life. And if we choose to go within and try and suss that out, you know, we all wouldn't be who we are today without our, what we've created for ourselves. So although the path doesn't always seem like a straight line, that self-acceptance, I think, is our first act of unconditional self-love. I'm sorry, I didn't exactly answer your question.
No, you did. You totally did. You did. You answered my question. You really did. And you answered it really beautifully, because what you all are sharing here today is, I want to say welcome to the realm, but I'm going to say something different. Welcome to the realm and the world of possibilities. See, that's the underpinning for what I hear you all talk about in your show. But the other thing that I hear, and Lee, you can touch upon this. The other thing I hear is it magic? Do I get my crystal ball, or do I actually have to do something here?
Well, right. I mean, there is doing involved. I mean, sometimes not always a doing. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, dropping in and being present and saying, oh, I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
And maybe you recognize, maybe that physical act is just recognition that, oh, just right now I realize that just that thing that I was thinking
mm-hmm.
has been there for quite some time and it is not serving me. I do not want to keep creating that. So
yeah.
How do I go within and find new material to play?
I don't love it. See, even vinyl is making a comeback. I want to kind of bring this home, Greta. You should see my vinyl collection. I almost sold it. I want to come back to this and really just, you know, in the minutes we have left, because this is really important to pick up on what you just said, Lee, and all of you said. And that is the meaning of all, this idea of all. The idea that we still cannot wrap our minds around the fact that we are all connected.
Absolutely.
There are some cultures, yes. So I don't want to make the global statement, because my table tennis coach was from Ghana, Africa, and I got to meet his mom, and successful businesswoman, right? And he is the most unlikely guy to ever coach a girl like me, just saying. But we did. He became my coach. And I got to understand about himself, and I got to learn things from him that I had never heard before. I'm 22. I had never heard these philosophies, but that's what I want us to talk about now, because we have got to get a very large bullhorn. Right, Greta?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would like just to, if I could say this, and it might be a little deviation a little bit.
Go for it.
But I want to say to everybody that's listening that there is no failure.
Hmm.
because I've listened to people and I've seen people go into guilt feelings. I did this or I didn't accomplish this. I had a young man say to me, I think I've wasted my life, you know, because he's experiencing alcoholism that he's leaving behind, you know. I told him, I said, no, you did not waste. There is no waste. There is no failure. We just see it. We perceive it to be failure. Like we compare a person who's in their three-bedroom home looking at a person who's living out of a cardboard box. You know, how does that person who owns that home perceive that the person in the cardboard box? And then you have, I was facilitating for a woman who worked on the Vanderbilt Island where they have their membership club and everything in Florida. And the condo is $35 million to begin with. So then you compare the $35 million person to the one who's living in the three-bedroom house and the one who's decided to live on the street. They're all the same. See, we think it's the illusion that we think that we are different, but that is not the case. Because each one of us has a lesson. And see, that's what we judge. We want to judge somebody else's lesson. We don't need to judge anybody else's lesson. What we need to do is take care of the lessons that we're supposed to learn and deal with that. That's a lot. Just unto itself, just dealing with us, let alone trying to deal with somebody else. If everybody dealt with themselves, if everybody loved themselves, see, you can't. My daughter said, Mama, who do you, she was eight. She said, who do you love the most? I said, myself. She said, you don't love me first? I said, absolutely not. I said, because if I don't love myself, how can I even begin to love you?
Yeah.
So that's the trick. It goes right back to loving self. And when you love yourself, you realize you haven't failed. Because every creation of reality, I don't care what it is, you've been successful at.
Yeah.
Because you created, you see. You created that. And you created it, why? Because you're learning lessons from it. A person who's incarcerated. I'm working with a person now who's been incarcerated for 15 years, sitting in one cell for 15 years. He's successful because that's what he chose to do, to deal with himself, to learn the lesson. You got the lesson. How are you going to deal with it? That's the creation of reality. How? How am I going to learn abandonment? How am I going to learn homelessness? How am I going to learn this? Every one of us chooses something. That's why we don't need to judge anybody. And that's why there's no failure whatsoever.
Okay, I think we're done with the show. I think we're done. I mean, I thank you for that. All of us understand what that road looks like, right? Right, ladies? We all know. I love how we are all in service in what the people on the outside would say are the oddest places. I get asked, why do I go to the prisons in Maryville and meet with the women in the prison? I get asked that question. And you know, my flippant answer, right, Yvonne? My flippant answer is like, why not? Okay, but for them, it would be the problem. Well, I know what it's like to sit behind bars. Albeit a short period of time, you never forget that. You never, ever, ever, ever forget it. But now I know that that experience was so that I would learn how to be of service. While other people may see that experience was a failure. How do you, look, Lee, Yvonne. Last comments on what Greta said. How are you with that failure idea? I love it. I so love. We should. You all come back. We need to do a whole show just on what Greta said. Greta, okay. I'm gonna have Linda schedule us because
I thought that was radical the first time it came through in a podcast, and I was like, no failure because we're all creating. exactly what we're creating, whether it's unconscious or conscious. It's still our molded clay. So that was, I felt very radical and very much a statement that could shift many an impression.
Yes. It's all good. It's all good. No judging anything. No judging.
I love it. I love it. You know, here's a thing for you all. There is a signature question I created over 20 years ago. Other people use it. It's, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? Now, I have had New Thought people, everybody want me to change and get rid of the word fail. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? But I needed it in there because that is an important question to get at what Greta just said. And I tried to change it. I had like these top best-selling people come on and say, oh, Dr. Pat, you need to change it. Don't use the word failure. And I'm like, I don't have an issue with the word. But what you just talked about, Greta, there are a lot of people that are feeling less than right now. They have watched their lives change, and they don't know how to not feel like failure. Are you feeling that, Greta, a little bit energy-wise?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because I've been there. Been there, done that. Yeah.
Someday we'll do a group call. And I'll tell you about a seminar I do when we're doing seminars again for business people, sales and marketing, on everything I needed to know about business I learned selling hot dogs from a hot dog wagon in New York while I was homeless.
I
so someday we'll do a show on that. But I can't thank you enough for you saying yes to this. I cannot thank you enough for what you're doing. And my commitment to all of you and my commitment to our listeners is we are going to do some new reality with the network very soon because we want people to hear more from you. Greta, tell everybody again how they can find out about the show, about you. And thank you all, Yvonne Lee. Thank you all so much for just being you. Greta, how do they get a hold of you? How do they listen to the show?
Shifting Impressions, Fridays, Transformation Talk Radio, you know, that we created to be with Dr. Pat. Because we could, there are a lot of people out there. We didn't go to a lot of people. We came to Dr. Pat. We were brought for us to do this work together.
Yeah.
This is a transformation for people all over the world, transformation for that. So check us out on Fridays, you know, and call in and, you know, ask us questions.
Mm.
Yeah. So every Friday at
8 a.m. Pacific.
What is it, 10 o'clock?
Yeah, 11 o'clock Eastern, yeah.
Yeah, we go all the way at 11 o'clock and Lee, which we didn't say, is sitting in Turkey. So
that's a reality.
Right. So it's in the afternoon here with us at night with Lee.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. So, yeah. Lee, get you some of that Turkish coffee. Hello. I think it's banned in the United States. So I'm going to share a secret, and this is how I'm going to end the show. I'm going to share a secret with you three I've never shared with you before. I'm not a person that gets easily intimidated. You gathered that, right?
Right.
I will tell you, totally intimidated.
The views expressed...